What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bold Take. Gonna start out this episode with a little advertisement. I'm gonna start out this advertisement with a tweet. And the tweet is from at Jalen Ramsey. So if I schedule an Uber at a certain time, but they come 20 minutes late because of the app's mess up, do I get my money back? Well, Jalen, you wouldn't have this issue if you had called Boz. Executive Transportation at 904-887-0763. You know why? Because Boz provides the best chauffeured service in town at reasonable prices. Is he ever 20 minutes late? I don't think so. So what you want to do is give him a call if you need a ride and a banging whip at 904 887-0763. You can go to his Twitter. It's at Jax Boz, JAXBOZ. You can hit the little DM button. He'll give you a ride from a DM. So listen, I've been trying to tell you guys about these ride-sharing apps. If you're in Jacksonville, you just hit up Boz. It's that simple. You don't have to worry about these ride-sharing apps and their apps messing up, being 20 minutes late, getting your money back. If you call Jax Boz, Executive Transportation, you're not going to like a call center rep or a phone tree, okay? You're talking to the man himself, all right? Give him a call. 904-887-0763. He is an essential worker, by the way. So if you need a ride, if it's an essential that you take a ride, go for it.
Love you guys, Duval County.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Bold Take. We've got some breaking news out of Mia O'Brien of First Coast News. You had MJD and a COVID-19 hero on like feature that she's doing called One Shining Moment. Look it up. She asked both of these people, this guy was an original season ticket holder, claims he has never missed a game. She asked them to do a Jags Mount Rushmore, and they both included Brad Meester on their Mount Rushmore. Cap, as the president of the Brad Meester fan club, what do you have to say?
Well, first and foremost, as the president of the Brad Meester and founding member of the Brad Meester fan club, I'll have you know.
I mean, only official member as far as I knew up until today.
Well, I mean, I consider all of you members, whether you know it or not. But
sure, of course. Still.
Let's kind of stick to the matter at hand here. It's a bittersweet moment for me, Solly, because I feel like I'm happy that there are other people that are giving Brad Meester his due. You know, as the president of the fan club, that's one of the things that we want. You know, we want to further that narrative of Brad Meester being the greatest Jaguar of all time. But at the same time, I feel a little taken aback. I do. I can't help it.
Lack of inclusion, perhaps?
Yeah. I think that first and foremost, MJD had him at 5. That's way too low. You know, I mean, we're talking at least top 2 here. But I don't know how I feel about it, man. Like I said, it's kind of bittersweet. I think that it's a good thing, but then at the same time, I feel like MJD maybe is just kind of trying to steal some shine here, you know? I think I'm gonna have to talk to him. So MJD, get at me in the DMs. Let's hash this out. If you'd like to be a board member of the Brad Meester fan club, there's room for you, buddy. There's room for you.
I honestly couldn't think of a better board member to have.
Yeah.
Throwing that out there.
No, that's what I say. I mean, like, I think you want me to be mad
from a
about this,
place
but I'm not going to be mad about it, Solly. I'm not going to be mad about it. Because that would be a kind of going against everything that is our mission with the Brad Meester fan club. So
And you're calling him a board member, but more of a cupboard member because he's so small.
Yeah, yeah. Tiny, even. Pint-sized. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to holler at Brad and see how he feels about it. You know, he doesn't like to do the social media thing. But I'm going to holler at him and see. So it was, I think, more than anything, Solly, and I know we've got to get to our very esteemed guest here shortly in a great intro that you have on deck. But I think more than anything else, it just took me off guard. I was not anticipating it, you know. But I think in the long run, it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing.
We can come to a good place from it. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we've covered that. We'll move on to our guest. We have Austin Lane joining us, radio personality co-host on ESPN 690 and Jax. We have to say thank you for bringing some other local sports talk to the airwaves. I'll leave it at that. He's also obviously a former Jags fifth round pick in 2010. Played a couple years here, a couple years other places. And he's also currently an MMA fighter. So, you know, don't fuck with him. Because it's not cool to fuck with MMA fighters. You know what I mean? It's just not.
That's smart.
Because, you know, they get in trouble and they can't fight anymore if they fight you back. So don't do that. So yeah, welcome. Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, Solly crushed it, man. Absolutely crushed that intro. I mean, damn, man. If we get something like that, go ahead.
No, we normally have the guests do their own intro, like kind of give it to us in your words, but
sure.
It's been so long since we like did a guest, except for Justice, which is just kind of chilling.
Yeah.
Rap talk that I forgot how to do it, dude. I forgot how we do it.
Well, and I'll say this, Austin. This is light years better than last week when he basically called out our guest for being unemployed. So your intro is way better, buddy. I mean,
yeah. Well, I'm going to say this, man. I'm going to need that audio from your intro, and we're going to actually have it on the show, I think, because when we have our show right now, it's a little too bland. And I've heard it like a million times. So, Solly, if I can get the audio from you, dude, that's going to be the new intro for me at least.
I can get my IT folks on that.
I like that, man. I appreciate that.
Our IT team. Well, Austin, thanks for joining us tonight, though, man. We appreciate it. We know you're a busy guy.
Dude, I mean, it's no problem at all. You know, it's kind of refreshing to kind of do an interview here where I can more or less be myself as opposed to having to wash my mouth a little bit, having, you know, can't use harsh language. It's refreshing to come hang out with you guys because it's kind of like just hanging out with some friends, man. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, are you ready for some questions here this evening?
So, as ready like I'm ever going to be, I guess. Those questions were handed to me this morning, but I didn't go through them. Maybe I should have. We'll see what you guys got to bring to the table, but
you can't say they weren't.
That's the challenge.
Well, generally speaking, I think our listeners are used to a couple of things. One, when we have guests on, we like to dig a little deeper and just kind of get to know you a little bit, right? I mean, I think most people know Austin Lane, the Jag player. Austin Lane does some MMA fighting. Austin Lane's on from 3 to 6 with Brent Martineau every day. We want to get behind, you know, we want to dig a little deeper on some things this evening. And then after that, we're going to get into the gauntlet.
The gauntlet.
I've heard things about the gauntlet. I have no idea what the hell that means. We'll see what happens. And hopefully you guys didn't dig too much into my Jacksonville Beach exploits because – that can get pretty weird really fast. So I'm really curious to see what kind of dirt you guys have on me.
Okay. All right. Well, stay tuned. That's coming up here on the gauntlet. But we're going to lob you up some easy ones first, man. You know, just kind of get you settled in. We like to get people a little bit, you know, feeling comfortable before we really, really turn up the heat on them. So I think one of the things, Austin, when we're talking with former players – that is a question that I know I always like to ask them is, you know, what made you come back to Jacksonville? Like what you finished playing, you weren't in Jacksonville when you finished playing necessarily. What made you come back and want to kind of make this your home?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it comes down to a few things really. Like number one, having grown up in Wisconsin for the majority of my life, obviously the cold winters, Those suck. And where I grew up, there wasn't much to do. So even like when I went to Murray State, Kentucky, that was a new experience, but like it was a smaller university, but to me it was big, right? So when I got to Jacksonville, man, I was kind of blown away a little bit just by how big, how spread out everything was. The more I kind of ventured around town and started to meet people, because I'm kind of like a social butterfly, right? I like to meet a lot of people. I like to have great conversation. And I realized about Jacksonville, it actually reminded me a lot of my high school where it had all types of people. And I found the conversations I'd have with those people, they were all great, right? So you kind of had like your surfer bums a little bit. You know, you had your country folks, if you will. And that's a nice way of saying it, obviously.
Rednecks!
But, no, literally you had all walks of life. And that's really what I've been accustomed to my entire life, because I get along with everybody, man. It doesn't matter your background, your upbringing. I try to find common ground with people. And I found that the people that I became friends with here in Jacksonville, man, they're all like that. So by the time it was time to retire and walk away from football, Jacksonville was in my back pocket just because it had the beach, number one, it had the great weather, but also the cool people. I love it because it's like, it's Florida, but it's not really Florida, right? Like I was at Miami for the Super Bowl, you know, in February, and like never really been to Miami, never been out in Miami. It was cool, man, but that shit was not for me, because like you had everyone taking selfies on the beach and everything. And it was just, it was a complete environment that I wanted to be a part of. Jacksonville was a little more slower paced, a little more laid back. So I just love, I love everything, man. I love the feel of the city. I like the blue collarness of the city. And obviously the people is a big part of it too.
Nice. Nice.
We agree. So like, yeah, while you're here then, day in the life of Austin Lane, radio host, MMA fighter. What does the day in the life of Austin Lane look like?
Shit, man. That's a good question. So usually the day in the life of Austin Lane revolves around me getting up in the morning with my son. And we engage in some kind of either we do MMA, we do wrestling, or we watch cartoons. He's a super active kid, so we like to have fun. Every once in a while, we'll go outside. We'll go on these quote-unquote monster hunts where we use our imagination. We try to track down monsters. So that's kind of how I get my morning started and everything like that. It's always a fun adventure. Take him to school, or well, he's not in school. I mean, he's in pre-K, you'd call it. So take him to pre-K. Usually I go get a workout in some capacity, whether it's a run, whether it's some MMA stuff, whether it's weightlifting. I get a workout in the morning, come home, just kind of chill a little bit, watch TV and start prepping for the show, do the show from 3 to 6, and then I do another MMA training session at night. So literally my life revolves around hanging out with my family, a lot of training. Every once in a while I watch TV, play video games, but I'm pretty busy from the standpoint of trying to stay busy with mixed martial arts and then obviously the radio show with Brett Martineau as well.
For sure. So MMA is like super, you know, you're super focused. You have to yeah. commit a ton of time to it. What's like balancing between MMA and a radio show where you're talking about sports and you're just, you know, throwing opinions, and not that they're just opinions, you know what I'm saying? But how do you balance that out?
See, to me, it's not even so much of a, I mean, it is a balance, but believe it or not, there's a few similarities between MMA and radio. The main one is that you can be whatever you want to be. You have the ultimate freedom. Now, obviously, I can't come on the radio show and drop F-bombs, and I have to kind of stay within the guidelines a little bit. Just like an MMA, you can't kick somebody in the balls. You can't eye gouge them, all that stuff. But to me, it's all about creating. I'm a big fan of creating content and creating art. Now, I'm not going to be a YouTuber. I'm not going to tell you to subscribe to my page because that's not my style. But I do like showing off my personality a little bit, whether it's in the cage or on the radio. So there's a little bit of a similarity with that. Now, obviously, in terms of having to be professional and then in the cage where you can just be whatever the hell you want to be, that's the difference, right? Where you kind of have to bring it all in perspective when you're on the radio. You have to know when to go, when to let your co-host go and things like that, and, you know, leave it up for the debates. MMA is more of just – it's controlled chaos, right? So when I get in the MMA gym, man, like we just go at it and it is what it is. So I would say the biggest difference from MMA to radio is you have to be a little more controlled on the radio.
Cool.
Yeah.
How'd you get into MMA? Was it like working out for football?
Yeah. So I took it upon the advice of my old defensive line coach, who was a full-fledged psycho, by the way, named Joe Cullen.
Joe Cullen.
Yeah. Joe. I mean, if you guys ever watched the combine and listen to the guy that's shouting during the defensive line drills, that's Joe Cullen.
Shout out Wendy's Joe.
Shout out to you. Said it at me. You said it at me. Hey, dude, you want to hear something ironic, though, about that? And then we'll get back to the question. So when I was at the Combine, Joel Cullen was interviewing me. And when I went to the Combine, I had two underages. Now, obviously, two underages, not smart, right? Like, I mean, I was a dumbass. I'll be honest with you. But I'll never forget when he came up to me. He's like, you got a drinking problem? I'm like, no, sir. It was just two accidents. I mean, I take full responsibility, but it's not going to happen again. He's like, yeah, it better not happen again. Get that drinking shit out of here. Well, I find out, like, you know, a year later that this fool was trying to school me on drinking and everything when I heard the waiting story. So, Joel Cullen, man.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, so it was actually his advice to have me do MMA. And why he kind of influenced me to do it was because of the hand speed. You know, you start working hand speed with boxing, it's good to play defensive end. Well, I went to an MMA gym. So it started to be boxing, and then I gradually got into jiu-jitsu a little bit. So every single offseason, I would do more. I would do kickboxing, I would do Muay Thai, I would do jiu-jitsu, and I fell in love with it. To the standpoint of when I got to Chicago and I was playing for the Bears, during the offseason, I was actually going to jiu-jitsu tournaments, and it was in direct violation of my contract. So I would go win a jiu-jitsu tournament. I would get a check. I would give them the check back and have to go out the back door and say, don't say I was here, because if they found out, I'd be in trouble, right? So that's kind of where my whole MMA career began, with Joel Cullen saying I need to work with my hands a little bit.
Did you did you use a pseudonym? Did you use some fake name when you were doing the jiu-jitsu tournament?
It was just Austin. A-U-S-T-I-N, though. I didn't do E-N. I did I, because, you know, I just did A-U-S-T-I-N. And then people – I felt bad, though, man, because I was kind of an a-hole a little bit, because I'd be – I did one tournament here in Jacksonville, and it was the River City – whatever. It was like the River City Rumble or something like that, whatever it was called. But people recognized me. And like, they want pictures of me. I'm like, no, man, I can't do it. Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be an asshole. But unfortunately, if word got out that I was doing jiu-jitsu tournaments, the Bears would be pretty pissed off at me. So
that's hilarious. Now, you know, I know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story about Madison Bumgarner, the pitcher for the San Francisco Giants.
For sure.
He was entering all the roping competitions and stuff. And he always used a fake name. So that just reminded me of that. That's hilarious.
So badass.
That's awesome.
When you left out the back door and handed them the check back, were you just like, charge it to the gang?
No, man. I literally just said, hey, give it to the guy that I choked out or whatever, man. But unfortunately, I didn't get the money. So. Dude, it was like $800 too, so shit. That's something to shoot away, you know what I'm saying? But right, yeah. I wasn't going to take that risk.
You should have just said, make it out to my agent. His name is Pat.
For sure.
So was radio something you were always interested in? And how did you, like with your personality, end up with someone like Brent?
So the first question was, radio something I envisioned? Hell no. I had no aspirations to be in radio. Never even crossed my mind one time. Had zero experience doing it. I guess what happened was, and you know, Brent tells a story, and I tell a story a different way. I say that Brent brought me on because in his cell phone, in his phone book, I was under the A's. So he's like one of the first people that he called. But, you know, Brent Martineau, we have a little bit of history, obviously. He was in the Jaguars locker room when I was there. So I knew of him, but I'll be honest with you, man. We never really had a conversation. Really, my only interaction with Brent Martineau was when I was a rookie. And this is back when hazing was still a thing, you know. So when I was a rookie, all the rookie defensive linemen, there was like four of us, got tied to a goalpost. And then they proceeded to, you know, pour baby powder on us and spray us with water and everything. Keep in mind, this is back when Del Rio's, you know, his time or whatever, my rookie year. So we had night practice. So practice got done around 9:30. So we get tied to the goalpost. We're not fighting. It's just like, just take it. It is what it is. It's kind of a rite of passage. I'm not going to trip out about it. So we get tied to the goalpost, and I'll never forget, Pot Rose goes to the media. Don't let him go. So Pot Rose gets off the field. I turn to Brent. I remember Brent. I'm like, hey, man. I don't know his name at the time. I don't know what his name is. I'm like, hey, man, come over here. And he comes over.
You're
here.
The square-looking one. Get over here.
He starts walking a little bit. And then, like, you know, like Jean-Claude Van Damme, like in an action movie, just fucking turns his back like there's a fire and walks away like a bat. And I'm like, all right, Brent, I see you, man. So that was my only really interaction that I had with Brent Martineau. So he gives me a call out of the blue. You know, 2 years ago now, I'm back home in Wisconsin, and I'm on a snowboarding excursion. I'm a little faded at the time when he called me, by the way. I see his phone number. I'm like, why the hell is this dude calling me? I thought I was like, you know, he must have butt dialed me, but answer it. Hey, you know, it's Brent Martineau. I'm like, yeah, I remember you, dude. What's up? And kind of offered me the job on the spot. And at the time, I was driving Uber. So to me, it was a no-brainer, right? Like, I mean, Uber was fun in its own ways, man. I love doing Uber and shit. It was just something for me to do. But I figured I might as well use my, you know, my scholarship and, you know, use my education, obviously, that I received from Murray State and do something else in my life. So that's where the radio came in.
Did Brent tell you right away how much money he was making off of it and how it
No, man, he didn't mention that at all. It was funny, too, because – so he essentially said, am I interested in doing it? I'm like, yeah, cool. I mean, I don't know anything about the radio. And I don't know why you're calling me for it. So I'll be honest, I was a little nervous, man. You know, I was a little hesitant to do it because, like I said, I had zero, I hadn't done anything in the radio. Like, I went to school for journalism and mass communications, but I had zero experience with the radio. And I even told him that. I'm like, dude, I just want to let you know, like, I'm brand new to this. Are you sure you know what you're doing? And then, I don't forget what he told me. He's like, listen, I remember you were always nice to everybody in the locker room. I'm like, all right, yeah, true. And he's like, imagine you're at a bar every single day. I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, I've lived in Jacksonville Beach for a while. So, and he's like, imagine you're at a bar for 3 hours a day having a beer, talking to your friends about sports. I'm like, say no more. So he told me that, and then I kind of got a newfound sense of confidence and everything. And then we had to do this mock radio thing the next day because he wanted to make sure that he made the right choice, right? So we had to do a mock radio interview for the bosses at Cox Media just to make sure that I was going to be okay for the job. And he told me, all right, so you have to know your Jacksonville Jaguar stuff, which obviously I already knew. And then he said you had to know your Florida State Seminole football and your Florida Gator football. Didn't know shit about it. I could talk Wisconsin football all day. Can't talk Florida or Florida State. So believe me when I said, like, when he told me that, I mean, I had about 20 hours to study, and I used 20 of those hours. Like, I had notes upon notes upon notes about the history of Florida State, the history of the Florida Gators. So we get to the mock interview, and, you know, like, he's recording and everything like that. And I'm a little nervous, but, dude, I got so many notes in front of me because we're not Zoom calling, we're not FaceTime, we're on the phone. So I have my cheat sheets all in front of me. We talked about the Florida Gators for about 30 seconds. Didn't even mention the Florida State Seminoles and talk to Jaguars the rest of the time. So, like, it was to the point where I'm like, hey, dude, do you want to touch on those Florida State Seminoles a little more? Because we can talk about it. He was like, no, we're all good. So it kind of pissed me off a little bit, man. But, yeah, I mean, obviously that was 2 years ago. We still have our show. And I'll say this about Brent Martineau, man. I think, Cap, you said it great. You know, like, when it comes to me and Brent, we have nothing in common, okay? He's a big golf guy. I hate golf. His music, he loves Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks is okay. I don't really like country music, right? TV shows, I've never seen Homeland, talks about it all the time, all right? I'm more into my anime, and I'm more into my shit like that I watch, right? So, like, we have nothing in common, but we make it work, man, you know? And I think the chemistry was there since day one, and just watching that dude work, like, it's one thing to say a guy works hard, but it's another thing to work hard like Brent Martineau. And that dude busts his ass not only on the radio side, but also the TV side. So I honestly can't picture myself with anybody else, you know, like, obviously the goal in this business is to try to work your way up, you know, and work with somebody else, you know, and get the ESPN gig one day. Dude, I don't want to do that, man. Like, I mean, I'm happy with Brent right now. I'm happy with Kuz, our producer. And, like, my personality, I'm very outgoing and I'm very friendly. But, like, if I'm not feeling something, I'll back out in a heartbeat. You know, I'll be like, nah, screw this shit. It's not worth it. And with Brent, man, I look forward to coming to work every single day. So he's honestly been a joy to work with, man.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that, man. And I definitely think most people can feel and hear that chemistry between you guys. And I've seen Brent at work. He definitely is just a hustler, man, which is just funny because he doesn't really, you know, you look at him, you listen to him, it doesn't – yeah, you gotta look like your normal dude who's hustling every day, but he is, man, and he's always been really good to all of us, to our groups, and you can't say enough good things about the dude. I speak for most people around town when we found out he was getting his own gig and we were finally gonna kind of have that other option, you know. Not saying anything good, bad, or indifferent about the other people on the other stations, but just having that other option and having Brent, that was big time. So, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and it's super telling too, right? Because in this business, for sure, you know, people talk all the time, and every person in this business, in this town that I've talked about Brent Martineau, I've never heard one bad thing about him. And honestly, and that's probably the only guy in this, you know, in this business you can actually say that about. For me, probably, oh shit, you know, he dresses like a bum. He's not professional. He's got to trim his beard, all this shit. Like, I'm sure people go to town about me and what I bring to the table. But I can honestly say, man, everyone that I've talked to has been nothing but great to Brent. So it's really awesome to hear because, you know, obviously that's my co-host, man. That's my homie. So
yeah, no doubt. What kind of along those same lines, how you got into radio, I'm intrigued. You said you were driving Uber, and then you said you felt like you needed to put the old degree to use. So, yeah. I mean, take us, like, where were you in life at that point? I mean, you were snowboarding, but you were driving Uber. You were training MMA at this point, I guess. Like, what were you thinking before radio that you might get into?
Dude, so it's crazy, you know, and listen, I always take pride in being very transparent about my life and what I bring to the table, so I got no problem being transparent here. So that phone call that he gave me was actually pretty crazy because right before that was my Greg Hardy fight. And if you guys don't know, I was fighting on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and it was me and Greg Hardy, you know, former Dallas Cowboy. And that fight had a lot on the line for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously, is for a UFC contract. Number two, I was kind of pictured as the good guy and he was the bad guy, right? Because Hardy had a bunch of, you know, prior things in the NFL, and there's a reason why he got thrown out of the NFL, right? So, like, I was, like, this good guy and he was the bad guy. So the fight goes down. I get my ass kicked on national television. And, you know, to be fair, I mean, it's part of the fight game, right? But, like, I'm a big believer in visualization. So I visualized that fight happening 100 different ways, but the problem was – I didn't visualize myself losing. So when I lost, man, that shit hit me super hard because I'm like, this wasn't supposed to happen like that, right? So then I get knocked out, and then all of a sudden everyone reaches out to me, and they're like, I can't believe you let that happen. You let that, you know, that loser go on. And it was never about, to me, the hero fighting the villain. It was just Austin Lane fighting Greg Hardy. But people put it to the category of, like, he's got to beat up that woman beater. We can't let, you know, Greg Hardy get to the UFC. Well, I failed, right? So it was hard for me to accept that. And to be fair, I wasn't in the best of place at the time after that fight, right? So when I was back home, man, and when I was doing Uber and everything, I was to the point where I wasn't really pumped about life. I'll be honest with you, you know? And that sucks to say because I got such a great family, I got such great friends. But to me, and just the way I've always kind of lived my life is I didn't really want to talk to anybody, okay? Because I always feel like, you know, if you're a kid, you're playing video games, okay? If you're playing video games as a kid, they always have that cheap thing called Game Shark, where if you put the thing in Game Shark, you got all the codes, right? You beat the video game faster. And it's cool, but you don't get anything out of it. That's how I always kind of felt with, like, talking to people about, you know, not being super pumped on life, was because if I talk to people, then it's like I'm almost cheating because they don't know what I'm going through. I know what I'm going through. I can get through it. So that's actually why I got into Uber really in the first place, is because Uber was a great opportunity for me to meet random people. And when I say that, I met three people that kind of turned my whole attitude around and kind of turned my whole outlook on life around. I met one guy who I picked up at the beach who was faded as all get out, just got done surfing, but only had like another year to live. He had brain cancer, didn't want to get chemotherapy. Long story short, I asked him, like, hey, dude, like, what's going on? What you been up to? Not much, man, just living my life. I'm like, yeah, I hear you. He's like, we don't got that much time. I'm like, I hear you, brother. We don't got that much time at all. He's like, no, I don't have much time. I have a year left. I'm like, what? So it turns out he had brain cancer, man. And just talking to that guy kind of changed my whole position on a lot of things that I was going through. So there was that guy. Another girl that I picked up was from like the mental clinic. She broke out and somehow got her cell phone and requested me as a driver. So now I pick her up and she tells me, like, yeah, I just I snuck away. I went AWOL. I'm like, well, should I take you back? Didn't take her back. I wasn't going to be that guy. And I took her to her friend's house. It was about a 20-minute drive, and we just had crazy conversations just about life and, you know, like feeling depressed sometimes and things like that. And that kind of turned my life around a little bit, right? So it was just these random people that I met that are going through a lot more shit than I was going through, I realized, that kind of put things in perspective. So now fast forward to when I'm back home in Wisconsin, I'm snowboarding, you know, and I'm having fun with my friends. Obviously, I'm snowboarding, but I'm still kind of, whatever. I'm going to go back and do Uber and get back to Florida. Can't wait. And then Brent gives me a call, man. And, like, that kind of changed everything around. Like, I still had MMA. I knew MMA was still going to be my thing. But Brent kind of provided for me another outlet to, I guess, get back, in terms of the Jaguars fan base, number one, and also just, you know, social media and the community, number two, because when I, after that Hardy fight, man, I kind of went off the grid a little bit. I wasn't really active on social media, didn't really want to be seen that much. I just kind of went to my own devices. And then Brent kind of brought me back out of my shell, man. So obviously I own that guy a lot. Sorry, that was a long-ass story about one question.
No, that's, no, that's fucking dope, dude. That's awesome.
That's an amazing story, man. Yeah. I think I'm a big believer that you're going to meet people in your life that, you know, that change your life. You're going to meet a few of them along the way.
Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. And sometimes it's just strangers, man. But, you know, those people can make all the difference. So it's all – I mean, listen – I'm not telling anybody not to go, you know, talk to somebody. Like, that's a bad way to do things, not talking to people. You got to talk shit out. But I'm just saying, from my perspective and what I believe in, man, it was cool to meet some strangers that kind of put a perspective on things. So
it's awesome, man. Everything happens for a reason. That's crazy. Exactly. Thank you for sharing that, man.
All good. All good.
You know, there's strangers. And then there's what happened a couple of weeks ago on sports radio ESPN Jax, excuse me. When you and our very own, the Dillicle, kind of had like a Step Bros moment. and you just live on the air, no big deal, shared your mutual love for Odd Future.
Man.
So break it down for our people here. We're gonna move away a little bit from kind of the past, transition into current day. Start getting some of your takes there. Tell us, tell the listeners of the Bold Take who Austin Lane is listening to right now. Who are your favorite artists?
So first of all, shout out to Dilla, man, because he comes on the show, drops Odd Future, and I had explained during the break who Odd Future was to Brent Martineau. And let's just say that he blew, you know, I mean, I blew his mind in terms of my knowledge of Odd Future. And obviously, shout out to Dilla, man, because he is the underground king, as I call him. And let's be honest, man, in terms of a revolution, the revolution never starts from the top, right? The revolution always starts from the underground. So props to Dilla. As I'm listening right now, dude, I'm all over the place, you know, and I think you see that sometimes if I'm playing death metal with my son or I'm dropping, you know, rap stuff on my Twitter page. Like, I love all types of music. In terms of Odd Future, you know, who Dilla really rocks with a lot, it really hit for me with Tyler, the Creator. It was the Bastard album, right? He drops the Bastard album, which is more like a mixtape, and I think the song was actually called Bastard, where he's playing the piano. Mm-hmm. And the opening stanza was like, this is what the devil plays before he goes to sleep. Right now, am I a devil worshiper? Hell no. But I respected, but I respected what Tyler, the Creator, did, because it was something new. It was something exciting. And even like when he dropped other stuff like Yonkers or Sandwiches, like, it was super like hardcore imagery, which I'm all about, because I actually grew up in the whole punk scene. Like, I was a skateboarder in Wisconsin, so I love punk music. And to me, like, Tyler, the Creator and Odd Future, they were kind of like the punk kids a little bit of hip-hop. They're the hip-hop misfits, if you will. So, like, when Yonkers came out, like, that was crazy. And obviously obviously the video where he's eating the cockroach and his eyes turn black and then he hangs himself and shit. Like, that was right up my alley, man. Like, that was my shit. Now, some of my friends were probably worried about me a little bit. And this is a true story as well. You guys remember a dude by the name of Nate Collins? Played for the Jaguars out of Virginia. So one day I'm blasting Sandwiches. I'm blasting Sandwiches in the cold tub because we have a giant speaker system. It was just me blasting Sandwiches, dude. I'm in the zone. I'm rapping this shit. Nate Collins comes up to me. He's like, dude, do you need somebody? Like, are you okay? Like, dude, do we call somebody? Because, you know, because we have like an NFL hotline to talk to people. And like, he literally wanted me to call somebody because he thought, like, you know, I was like the Satan kind of worship or whatever. No, nothing like that at all. So I've always been a big Odd Future guy. Tyler, the Creator, for me, especially the older stuff. He kind of got more into the R&B, which I get it, man. There's definitely a need for that. So I'm not hating on it whatsoever. The guy's an artist. Haji Beats, obviously. I'm a big fan of Earl Sweatshirt, especially Chum. Chum was a song that growing up really resonated with me, the lyrics, because they always say he's too black for the white kids and too white for the black. I can relate to that a little bit. So they're just super different guys. They're out there and they create shit, and I'm diehard fans of them, man. I love it.
That's awesome. So you said you're kind of all over the place with your music tastes, and you said you kind of love a little bit of everything. except for Garth Brooks, right? I mean.
Yeah, well, it's funny, man, because actually I grew up first with country music. It's a long story, but actually I lived with my grandparents for 6 or 7 years. And my grandpa, who was super old school, only had 8 tracks. So living in the country in the middle of nowhere, I didn't really have a lot of devices of friends and shit to do outside. So I would play his 8 tracks. So he had the Statler Brothers. He had Johnny Cash, who I was a big Johnny Cash kid growing up. So, like, I get country, man. And, like, growing up in Wisconsin, like, it's kind of ingrained in you. But, like, when I got to, I guess, the league in Jacksonville, that's when, like, Florida Georgia Line and all that stuff came out. And, nah, man, like, I can't co-sign on Florida Georgia Line, you know, singing about your truck and the Fireball whiskey with your girl every single weekend. Like, I don't give a shit. But, like, there are some special ones, like Zach Brown Band, like, you know, Chicken Fried. I'll never forget, dude, my first day in the locker room in Jacksonville, Dave Grohl busts out Chicken Fried because Dave Grohl's country as hell. And everyone, like, whether it was, like, Mojo, whether it was, like, Mercedes Lewis, like, everyone got down to Chicken Fried by Zach Brown Band. So every once in a while, you try to find a banger in there, you know?
That's hilarious. So, yeah. So you mentioned Florida Georgia Line. Yeah. I've told this story before, but I'll tell you real quick. The Florida part of Florida Georgia, I played baseball with him growing up. Florida Georgia had like five CMAs and Grammys, like, before I ever knew that it was a dude that's how little I listened to modern country. I had no clue until one day, like, my wife had a music video or something on, or it was one of the award shows, and you know, he looks totally different because he's gone all Nashville now, and, like, you know, he's got the Rascal Flatts look almost. And I was just like, that guy looks so familiar. So I went and I Googled, like, you know, band members of Florida Georgia. And I'm like, what the fuck? Are you kidding? Like, texting my buddies back home, like, how come nobody told me this guy? And it all made sense because the dude went to Belmont or Vanderbilt, I forget, to play baseball. And so that's how he ended up in Nashville, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, hilarious, man. All right, punk bands. So I grew up on what bands? Give us a couple.
Oh, man. I mean, Misfits, Titus Andronicus are big. Bad Brains, Anti-Flag, you know, kind of the usual choice cuts. But, like, nowadays, man, I'm all about Titus Andronicus. They're a punk band out of Jersey, kind of low-key. Drove to Orlando about 4 or 5 months ago to go see them before the pandemic hit, man. And they put on a great show. So, yeah, you know, I was grew up in the whole punk scene, the skateboarding scene, grew up in the hip-hop scene a little bit as well. And that's kind of being a kid of the 90s, man. It was a bunch of shit to get into, you know, and I always got along with everybody. So whether it was, you know, the jocks I hung out with, the burnouts that I hung out with, like, they each kind of had their own brand of music that I got into, so. Yeah, I'm kind of versed in terms of genres of music, I guess you could say.
So we let our guests, like, ride out with the outro music. What are we vibing out to today?
Oh, shit. That's a good call. You know what? Let's go with a little out there hip-hop. Let's go with Malibu Ken Acid King, which might be my next walkout song. So Malibu Ken Acid King. Crazy song. Crazy beats and a crazy story behind it. Check it out.
Boom.
Yeah.
I've never heard.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
You got more, Cap?
No, go ahead, brother.
Let's talk some Jags, man.
Let's do it.
We kind of want to touch on, you know, a little bit your time, but we kind of want to touch on, you know, if you got stories from your time. But we want to talk about the current Jags too. You know, you kind of were with the Jags at a point that when you left, the whole thing kind of changed a little bit with Shad Khan buying the team, Dave Caldwell, Gus Bradley. You weren't really around for those guys. But it seems like we still have the same kind of stink about us.
Yeah.
what do you attribute that to? Do you think that's coincidence?
Man, it's a good question. Yeah, so, you know, I was there for Shad Khan's first year, you know, and I was there when he came in to talk to the team and, you know, he kind of gave a speech a little bit. And I'll be honest, when Shad Khan came in, man, and the Weavers left, and nothing against the Weavers, you know, they're great people in their own right. But I think there was a feel of, you know, like that fresh new excitement, you know, something different is coming in, a guy that wants to win. You know, I mean, the first thing he said is we're going to win a Super Bowl here in Jacksonville. All right, let's go. I'm on board and everything. you know, when Gus Bradley came in is when I was on my way out the door. And but, I mean, it was a couple reasons, but the big reason I didn't really fit into his defense at all. I mean, I was a I would have been considered like a hybrid, a tweener, if you will. So thank God I went to Kansas City then and played a 3-4 defensive tackle technique. But, really, that just really panned out well for me. God, I love doing that.
You win, Dillard.
But, you know, you asked the question of, like, that stench, you know. I mean, and that really was there, to be fair, after 2010. 2010, my rookie year, we go 8-8. We miss out on the playoffs. I think we lose our last three games. We kind of shit the bed a little bit, don't go to the playoffs. And there was a lot of optimism next year. You know, and that optimism was around that we had Dave Girard coming back. We still had Jack Del Rio, who I thought was a great coach. And we had the core pieces to be successful. Well, then Blaine Gabbert comes in. And I don't know how much if you guys know about the story, but, you know, Dave gets fired after the luncheon, essentially. Like, we're at our team luncheon. They announce the starters, you know, so we're all pumped up and everything. We got Tennessee in, shit, I think 6 days. And we get on the bus, and we park outside the stadium, and all of a sudden they go, Dave, get off the bus real quick. And we're still on the bus. We're like, why is Dave getting off the bus? So we had no idea what was going on. So Dave just left, went in the stadium. We followed, you know, maybe like 5 minutes later, then they let us off the bus. We go to his locker, and his locker is cleaned out. And we have a game in 6 days. And we're thinking, like, all right, is this some kind of, like, punk thing, like, where this can't be real? Like, Dave's the dude, you know? Like, yeah, we have Blaine Gabbert. But I think the plan was to Blaine Gabbert to, you know, set this year out, learn from Dave, and then he'll take over. And, no, Dave got, you know, let go. I think Gabbert came in, like, week 3, week 4, and the rest is history. So, you know, to answer the question of where does the stench come from, I mean, obviously you talk about the game of football, it starts with quarterback play, okay? And let's be honest, the quarterback play this past decade hasn't been good. In terms of the culture, in terms of the pillars, I always say this, because I've been on a couple teams and I've seen the goods and I've seen the bads. I knew when I was in Kansas City, Kansas City's going to have something special with Andy Reid. The cool thing about coaches is that you can be the hard ass if you want to, but it has to be genuine. If you are going to be a player's coach, like a Gus Bradley, if you will, you have to make sure that you have the pillars in place. You have to make sure that you have the captains in place to monitor the locker room. That's what Kansas City was when I was there. You know, you had guys like Eric Berry. You had guys like Tamba Ali, Justin Houston. Those guys were all captains. And Andy Reid was probably the most easygoing coach ever. But he had the captains to say, you know what, if we're fucking up, they're going to let us know about it.
So some good insight there from you, Austin. I think similarly to that question and what you kind of just gave us as far as juxtaposing the old situation and the new situation and why it all just stinks. Yeah. For you now professionally, how relatable is it covering a bad franchise versus having played for one? You know, like, and it being this, and furthermore, it being the same one, yeah. And then even furthermore, it being the one in now the town that you call home, like the hometown team.
Yeah. You know, it's I guess it comes full circle, if you will, right? Because when I was on those bad teams in Jacksonville, you know, my second and third year in the league, in terms of the media, didn't want to talk to the media. Like, I was always respectful towards them. But, like, I remember one time I turned on 1010 XL one time. It was to this day. It was, like, 7:30 in the morning. Someone was talking shit about me. I'm like, well, that's done. Like, I'm done with the local media. Like, I don't know who the guy was. I have no idea. But I'm like, I'm done. Never, you know, talk to her, give them the time of day ever again. Just after one comment, you know. So looking at it now, it's – I always say this. The way I approach how I, you know, talk about the team on the radio, well, number one, obviously, it sucks, right? Because you want to talk about a winner. Now, to be fair, when you have drama like Yannick Ngakoue and Jalen Ramsey and Tom Coughlin, that's good radio. People turn into that. So I think I picked a damn good year to get in the job of radio. Brent tells me this all the time. So I'm thankful that we always have stuff to talk about. But obviously, it's hard to be professional, but also not be a Jaguars fan, right? Because I still know guys in that locker room. I still know about, you know, some of the coaching staff, the training staff. And I want to see them be successful because Jacksonville's still my city, and I want to cheer for a winner. So it is hard sometimes, you know, to be so critical because I was in that locker room, you know. And if a guy is driving to the stadium at 3-6, you know, at least I want him to come across and say, you know what, maybe Austin was hard on me, but he was still respectful. I always talk about it like this. I've talked about it on the show before. The way I approach how I talk about players on the radio is this. when I'm done with my show at 6 o'clock and it's 6:15 and I'm walking in the parking lot, I expect them to be outside. And I expect them to be outside and either they're going to say, you know what you said was fine, or I'm pissed off and I want to fight you. And I think what I've done so far in the past year and a half of, you know, being critical of players, I think that I can hang my hat on knowing that I never called anybody out, you know, and I never called anybody a bad name, things like that. Because there's some guys in this town or any sports media platform where people want to call players out and people want to talk shit behind their back. But then when you come face to face with them, oh, what's up, man? Good to see you. You know, you want to be all professional. I'm not like that, man. Okay. I'm always going to be real. So I'm not going to talk behind a player's back, and I'm always going to imagine that they're listening. So yeah, I'm still going to be critical, and I'm still going to say, Yannick Ngakoue, don't talk shit to Tony Khan. That wasn't smart. You know, I'm still going to be very hard on these players, but I'm never going to talk bad about someone, their character, things like that, because I was in the locker room one time before.
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of pointed out the one end of the spectrum there just now, as far as the folks that are in local media or any sports media in general that will talk that shit behind someone's back, whether it's for attention on the radio, right, or whatever it is, just for, you know, for good content, they'll do that. But then when they see the person, it's like, you know, they're dapping them up and, can I get a picture for my kid? But then the other end of that spectrum that I think a lot of Jaguars fans would agree with me is, especially locally, a lot of the former players that are still here that do cover the team in some capacity, they don't want to be critical. So I think there's really those two ends of that spectrum. And I find it interesting to hear your perspective on it, because I think that's a refreshing one. Because now, to be fair, I guess some of those guys that are covering the team work for the team, right? The team is signing that page. And
right.
I think that makes it.
Yeah. Not to name names, but Baselli and Logman.
No, you know, you're absolutely right. And then thankfully, and you know, I've been told this many times by some of my colleagues, you know, in Cox Media, where it's like, no one owns you. So you can say whatever you want to say about the organization. And I have, man. I've been hard on Shad Khan. You know, obviously I've eviscerated Tom Coughlin on more than one occasion. And I'm sure Tom Coughlin doesn't want to go out to me at the Jack's Beach Bistro anytime soon. And that's cool, you know, but I feel like I just try to tell it like it is, man. I don't have to answer to anybody. You know, I'm just going to speak my mind. And that may run the organization or the wrong way, which is kind of ironic. I used to play for them. I mean, you know, my second game at, you know, in Jacks, I used to do this thing called three takeaways with Austin Lane. And what we used to do is we used to go in the stadium after the game and I'd get my three takeaways. Well, I got thrown out of the stadium because someone wasn't a fan of me recording my stuff in the stadium. Now, whether that was more of an ESPN 690 thing, or if that was more of just they weren't really a fan of me ripping the team in the stadium, so I had to go outside with all the drunk people pissed off, whatever it was. But I can kind of tell that I was on somebody's, you know, whoever it was, I was on somebody's radar where they didn't like what I was after the game.
That's relatable.
Chad Dickman. Would you, if it came down to it, Austin, would you throw hands with Tad Dickman over your media access? Yes or no?
No, man. Listen, Tad's been always cool with me, man. So I got no issues with Tad Dickman. Tad Dickman's he's a friend, dude.
Nobody has any issues with Tad Dickman.
Friend of the program.
No, Gene Fournette, though. Let's be honest, though. Gene Fournette.
Oh, we're going to get to that. Don't worry, we're going to get to that.
Me and Gene always go back and forth, man. He's a great dude.
So I don't know if we can get any spicier than Gerard getting, you know, walked off the bus, but yeah. Do you have any extremely spicy stories from the locker room?
I mean, dude, I got so many. What do you guys want to hear? I mean, what kind of genre are you looking for here? You want fights?
Just like what's going to, like, something that maybe nobody knows, you know, not necessarily secret telling, but
something
that would be like, holy shit.
Man, something that nobody knows. I mean, that's a hard one, man.
Dillard deals in information, you see.
Yeah, I know, for sure, right? He's trying to make one of his sources, man, coming up that underground a little bit. Man, something that nobody knows. I mean, dude, that's a hard question. I wish I would have put on the
light. We could start with fights, too. I mean, fights.
I mean, I was just going to say, like, what's something weird that a teammate used to do? Like, I mean, what's the weirdest thing that a teammate would do in the locker room or something?
Oh, dude, I mean, like, you had a guy like Matt Roth, who defensive end, who had the entire Walgreens pharmacy in his locker, and nobody ever said anything about it. Like, it was just, yeah. I mean, we got, what do you, got a headache? What are you trying to get a little pump in? What are you trying to do? Like, that was all up in there. So that was really weird. Derek Harvey, the way he used to pronounce bisque, lobster bisque, was always funny, man. I'm trying to think of, like, a good story that – because, you know, our defensive line room was – it was one for the ages. You know, like, in terms of Hard Knocks, when you talk about myself, Jeremy Mincy, Derek Harvey, Pot Roast, Aaron Campman, who was, like, you know, the, like, the golden child, like, our defensive line room could have had its own sitcom. Probably the craziest story that comes to my mind that I never really shared before was actually the very first fight I ever got in. Because obviously I've been kind of known for a lot of fights, obviously, on the practice field. But the first fight I ever got in was in a cold tub in the stadium. This would have been like week 4, week 5. Get this shit. All right. So it was like we're getting ready for the rookie skit night. And for whatever reason, the vets made me – they gave me a male blow-up doll. And what I had to do with it is I had to make fun of, like, our trainings, like, our trainers, right? So, like, our warm-ups, I had to do a warm-up with, like, the blow-up doll. And then they did a video of it. Kind of stupid, it is what it is. Well, we had this defensive tackle by the name of Walt Curry. Walt Curry was certified insane. True story. He actually beat up his therapist, I guess. So the guy had, you know, whatever. He had some issues. He was a defensive tackle. Josh Scobie took the blow-up doll. And you can ask him about this, too, because he still owes me one, man. So Josh Scobie takes the blow-up doll, puts it in Walt Curry's locker. Okay, Walt Curry comes in from a workout or whatever, comes in from the stadium, goes into his locker and sees the blow-up doll and absolutely loses his shit. Like, loses his shit. I mean, it was kind of funny, right? It's a blow-up doll. Like, it's a male blow-up doll. Ha-ha. Whatever. Walt Curry didn't think it was very funny at all. And Walt Curry, playing defensive tackle, probably 320 at the time, comes in the cold tub where I'm standing because he knew I was in the video for the skit night. So he knew, like, it came from me, and he asked me if he put it in his locker. I'm like, it wasn't me, man. I swear my life, I did not put that blow-up doll in your locker. And Walt Curry was like, all right, then who was it? So here's where my dumbass is at now, right? I know Josh Scobie's a big deal in Jacksonville, okay? He's a kicker, yes, but I understand that Josh Scobie's one of those dudes. So I wasn't going to sell Josh Scobie underneath the river so Walt Curry could beat his ass. Because number one, he's a kicker. Number two, like, he's one of the guys that Jacksonville needs. So, like, this is me trying to be a rookie and be like, this is where I earn my stripes right now. This is where I stand up for a captain. This is where I stand up for a special teams dude. I'm going to be like, I'm not going to leak the information. So Walt keeps egging me. Where's it? Where's it at? Where's it at? Who was it? Who was it? I'm like, I'm not telling you, man. He's like, well, then we're going to have a problem. I'm like, well, I guess we got a problem then. So it's me in the cold tub, and you guys remember Larry Hart?
Yeah.
Larry Hart, dude. Bless his heart. I literally talked to him probably a week ago. He's a solid dude. Larry Hart and myself were in the cold tub, okay? I don't know Larry Hart really that much at the time. Like I said, we're 3 or 4 weeks into it. We're part of the same rookie class. One would think the guy's going to have my back. So I'm popping off to Walt Curry. Walt Curry takes off his sweatshirt, and now he's proceeding to come in the cold tub. We're about to throw it out. Larry's right next to me. I'm like, well, I got Larry here. It's going to be all good. Larry sees Walt Curry come in, trying to beat my ass, and Larry goes the opposite direction. Like, notices, like, oh, no, Lane, this is you. I'm like, motherfucker. So now it's me and Walt Curry literally, like, going blow for blow in the cold tub. And it's one thing getting a fight, obviously, adrenaline's flowing. But, like, when you're getting ducked underneath an ice-cold, you know, cold tub and shit, dude, it's a different level, man. So, like, I'm trying to, like, not get hypothermia. I'm trying to throw fists and everything. Eventually, a bunch of guys come in, break it up. No one really got any good shots, and unfortunately, I didn't get any good shots. And so I'm walking out, and our strength coach, Luke Richardson, who now I think is still in Houston, comes up to me. He's like, all right, here's what you're going to do. If he comes back at you, just give him a 1-2. Straight down the middle and knock him out. I'm like, all right. Sounds good, Luke. Thanks a lot, man. But thankfully, it never came to that. But here's the most messed up part of that whole story. Josh Scobie never said thank you one time to me. I literally took a bullet for Josh Scobie. I told him what happened. He's like, oh, man, that's crazy. I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. Because you could have got your ass beat, but I had your back, man. A thank you would suffice, but never got a thank you or anything from Josh Scobie. And I'm still bitter about
kickers.
It. I know, man. I know, but, you know, that was me trying to be a rookie, you know, trying to have his back. I mean, if that would have been like a 2 or 3 year bet, it was Josh Scobie. Go get him. But it is what it is.
I mean, it's not too often that the defensive lineman is sticking up for the kicker. I mean, that's –
I know, man.
It makes sense why Blake Zona and Josh Scobie are friends now.
Fucking cops.
Oh, the cops. Oh, my goodness. So a couple things stick out for me in that story. One, Larry, his name is now Larry Nohart because my man's got Larry's got to go. Larry's got to go. And then we got to – I think, man, that might be material for an Austin Lane episode 2.0. Maybe get you and Scobe on and just – maybe we hash this thing out.
Oh, well, we have to, man. We have to. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, obviously, I've never brought it up to anybody before. I mean, I've told, you know, my friends and shit. But with in terms of Scobe, like, I've never said, hey, man, what about that thank you? Never brought it up to him one time. So it would be good to finally get that thank you that I so, you know, joyfully deserve.
Yeah. No, that's – you know what? That's our mission now. And I don't know if you know this about us, but we're men of very particular skills.
I appreciate it, man.
Yep. And our Twitter powers combined with the Dillicle powers.
Yeah.
I think we can make this happen though. So that's a solid story though. That's really good. So what else you got?
So I wanted to switch gears a little bit, talk about the current team. Let's start. I mean, we just had the draft. Obviously you were an edge guy yourself. We took an edge guy in the first round, Kalavon Chaisson. Wanted to get like
who?
Him or anybody. I think we call him Calvin Chase on this program, but
Calvin Chase. I probably made a mistake myself, man. You're all good.
Yeah, no. That's well around here, Austin. Just for kind of information's sake, when it comes to first round D linemen, you got to earn your name. Like we're like Dilla still does not say Taven Bryan. Dilla refuses to say Taven Bryan. He's called him every other name in the book. So we're already starting with Calvin Chase. Maybe he'll eventually get his name. Maybe he won't, but that's where we're coming at with that. So
yeah, that's pretty messed up though, man. Like Calvin Chase sounds like he should be selling like State Farm insurance or something like that.
Well, to be fair, his rookie year, we thought Taven Bryan should be too. So that was us, not Austin.
Thank you.
So yeah, give us your thoughts, man. Like I said, transitioning into the current team here, the 2020 or maybe 2021 version of the Jaguars, if they don't ever play, with the draft, starting with you know either one of those guys, if you got takes on both of them.
Yeah, you know, so as far as Chaisson's concerned, I mean, obviously he was a guy that was on my radar. He's an edge rusher. Yannick Ngakoue is going to be gone, you know, maybe get traded, but obviously by the end of the year, he's not going to be here anymore. So in my opinion, you can never have too many edge rushers. So I love the Chaisson, you know, draft right there, the draft pick. You know, C.J. Henderson, obviously the Jaguars reached up a little bit, right? And to replace Jalen Ramsey, to replace A.J. Boye, I get it. You know, you have to take a little bit of a risk here. I was a big Javon Kinlaw guy, all right? I think that guy's going to be a special player in this league for a long time. I think he's got probably the best first step out of any defensive lineman this year in the draft, and that goes a long way. I like the guy's story. I was a big Javon Kinlaw fan. Obviously, it didn't come to fruition. It takes C.J. Henderson. It was a risk. Listen, I'm not going to write C.J. Henderson off yet, right, because I haven't seen the guy on the field. I mean, I've seen highlights and things like that, and I like how he's a press corner. I like how he embraces the man-to-man coverage, so that's promising. But until I see him on the field, it's hard to really gauge what I think about the pick. Now, like I said, I would have probably took Kinlaw and maybe a corner, you know, at number 20, but it is what it is from that standpoint. So overall with the draft, I'm not upset about it. I like Chenault a lot. I think that was probably the biggest pickup for them. A very diverse guy, can do the wildcat, he can play out of the slot, can play on the outside, squats over 550 pounds, which is stupid for a wide receiver. I'm not sure if he's getting drug tested or not, but hopefully he takes the proper precautions for that because 550 is ridiculous for a wide receiver. I'll say that again, and I'll repeat myself.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but strong winds, according to the Jaguars. you know, Gardner's got big muscles, so we're Super Bowl bound.
Well, and you said it, man. And that's probably the biggest thing that I'm excited for the season is to see if Gardner Minshew is indeed the guy going forward. Now, do I predict the division title for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year? Probably not. Let's be honest here. I think if they get 6 to 7 wins, I think that'll be actually a pretty successful season. It's an interesting season, though, because Last year on the show, I said that if the Jaguars won below eight games, that Doug and Dave were gone. There's no way they're going to keep, you know, they're going to stick around. And for whatever reason, Shad Khan has chose to retain the head coach and the general manager. Now, one could say that has a lot to do with Gardner Minshew, obviously, where there's intrigue not only from a marketability standpoint, but also maybe a player standpoint. So if you're Dave Caldwell, you can kind of dangle Gardner Minshew and say, yeah, I know we only won six games, but guess what? We got Gardner Minshew. Let's see what happens. So I'm very curious to see from a couple things. Number one, obviously Gardner Minshew. But number two, how many wins is it going to take for Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell to keep their job? Because when the season was over, we had Shad Khan tell us that the goal is to still win games, right? Like 2020, we're going to win games and, you know, we're going to go back to the way it was back in 2017. Well, you let go of Calais Campbell. You let go of A.J. Boyan, okay? You have the youngest roster in the NFL right now. That doesn't tell me that you're trying to win games. That tells me you're trying to build for the future. So I just don't know where everything's at right now, because you're trying to build for the future, but you have a coach and a GM that's supposed to win this year, right? Where if they win five games, how can you justify bringing back Dave Caldwell and Doug Marrone for another year? So it's an intriguing season. It's an eerie season, I think. And I think there'll be more questions than answers by the time week 16 comes around.
So you mentioned, I think we all agree with you, by the way. It is in a really weird, maybe not so fun way. It's one of those seasons where there's a ton of intrigue. Yeah. And I think most of us are more scared than we are excited by the prospect of what might happen. But I do want to kind of get your take a little bit more in depth on the Gardner situation, because I listen to you guys, whenever I'm in the car between 3 and 6 usually. And I would say overall, you of maybe more so than anybody else locally has been pretty consistent with, you got to see what you have in Gardner.
Yeah.
And just kind of that take that you've had, not just from a talent perspective, but also, like you said, the marketability and just everything that's going on. So run through for the folks that maybe don't listen to you guys all the time, why you've been pretty steadfast with that.
Yeah, well, you know, to answer that question, we have to rewind the clocks back to when Gardner Minshew was at the Senior Bowl. And he was actually one of the quarterbacks I wanted to interview at the Senior Bowl, because his story I thought was intriguing. His personality I thought meshed well for an interview. And I just wanted to ask him about his suit that he rocked, you know, for the bowl game. So I met Gardner Minshew back at the Senior Bowl. We did a one-on-one interview. And I remember, if you go back and listen to that episode on our show when we were in Mobile, I told Brenton, I'm like, listen, I don't know where this guy's going to end up, okay? And I'm not sure where he's going to get drafted. But the fact that he has so much confidence in himself and that he knows who he is, if nothing else, that's going to get him at least a shot. And I didn't say he's going to be a Pro Bowl player, Rookie of the Year contender. Didn't say any of that. All I said was that he has the mindset to be a great leader, okay? That's all I said. So now fast forward, obviously Minshew gets drafted, has a horrible preseason, all things considered, loses his helmet in Baltimore. I mean, I'm like, shit. We were talking about, do we have to get a backup quarterback in there, right? Like, I don't think anybody believed in, I'll be honest, I was in the same boat where I'm like, I don't think Minshew's going to be the guy going forward, man. Like, they better get a backup quarterback, you know, for Foles, because if Minshew has to go in, I don't know. Well, then, you know, obviously Minshew goes in, he does this thing, and the rest is history. And I've just been so adamant about what he is as a football player, because I know how hard it is to get a great quarterback in the league, okay? I played with a bunch of mediocre ones, I guess you would say. I played with a couple decent ones. And I know what a good quarterback looks like, and I know what a good quarterback brings to the team, okay? And I think it's very telling when you ask Gardner Minshew's peers about what type of guy he is. And what do they always say? They say he's a dog. He's a dog. When you get called a dog in a football locker room, that's the ultimate compliment. That's like saying, like, he's the king, okay? So he's earned the respect of his teammates already, which is not that easy to get, especially being a sixth-round pick who wears his jock strap around and does weird things, right? Like, I mean, let's be honest. A lot of his teammates can be like, who is this guy? But he's earned the respect of that locker room, number one. Number two, if you look at his stats this past season, yeah, he won 6 games, lost 6 games. One can make an argument, well, the 6 games that he won, they're against mediocre competition. I don't care, man. The guy still won 6 games as a rookie. Not an easy task to do. And I think number three, you know, it's you have to see what you have with him. I've been very adamant about it. Do I think Gardner Minshew is going to be good this year? I think so. Do I think he's going to be the guy for the Jaguars the next decade? I have no idea. I honestly can sit here right now and say, man, I have no idea. I don't know if Gardner Minshew is going to be the guy or if they're going to get a first-round pick next year. But let's find out. You know, like what drove me crazy about everything was the national media and some people in town made it sound like Gardner Minshew is going to be a placeholder. And he was just here just because of his, you know, of his mustache and his bandana. Like, yeah, he's a cool story, but no one's talking about his football skills. I'll be honest, I don't give a shit about his mustache or his bandana or his jean shorts. I've had all three before, okay? I was rocking them before even he was rocking those things. So I really don't care about that. All I care about what he brings on the field and how he controls the locker room. And what I've seen on the field and what I've heard from his peers in the locker room, they're saying he's the guy. His coaches stand by him. So once again, I'm just saying, let's give him a chance and let's see what he's got.
Yeah, it's refreshing to hear someone kind of put it in those exact terms, because I think you're speaking for most rational fans as well. You know, the people that have been here with this team, that have seen all of those mediocre at best QBs that, you know, that we, some that we've mentioned, others that we haven't so far. And for me personally, when I sit there and I kind of take stock of the conversation that surrounds him nationally, not just locally, but nationally, it is a little confusing. We're in this weird spot with Gardner Minshew as a fan base right now. And I don't know if you notice it on Twitter with the calls that you guys get, the interaction. There's some people that are like anointing him the next Drew Brees. And there's some people who are like, you know, he's trash. We need to tank for Trevor Lawrence or whatever it is. And then in the midst of that, you've got – he won 6 games last year. In the games that he played well, he was like either the rookie of the week nationally for the whole league, or he was in the running for it. And it seems like other his peers that had similar levels of success or similar production over their rookie season – they're not getting the same treatment of, you know, like he's almost being patted on the head. You know what I mean? Like you said. So is this really, and I think maybe that's what makes it even more intriguing to see what happens, because either it's,
I guess what drives me crazy more than anything is it's a couple of things. He's a 6th round pick and people love to throw that in the air. You know, like Dwayne Haskins was a 1st round pick. Kyler Murray was a 1st round pick. Drew Lock, I think, was like a 3rd round pick. So, like, number one, people want to shortchange Gardner Minshew because of look where he was drafted. I mean, he started 6 games, or, you know, he started 12 games his rookie year. Like, that's all we need for him. He's a 6th round pick. Well, dude, he's going into a 2nd year now. Nobody gives a shit where you're drafted. You're an NFL vet now, right? You're going into your 2nd year. You burn your stripes. I don't care what he was drafted. Let's just see what he's got. And I think the problem with the national media and some people in the local media is they have this preconceived notion of what a quarterback is. They have a preconceived notion of how tall a quarterback should be, what his arm strength should be like, how he should act, his demeanor, what he should wear. There's this ultimate double standard in terms of the quarterback position in the NFL. Now, some of it could be warranted. I think some of it's BS. But when you talk about Gardner Minshew, you talk about a bunch of things that are going against him, right? His size. Can he make all the throws and things like that? I don't know, man. Can Drew Brees make all the throws? Is Drew Brees tall? Like, to me, fortune always will favor the bold. And if you look at teams that have had a lot of success in the NFL, they're the teams that have taken chances and thunk outside the box a little bit. To me, Gardner Minshew right now is the Jacksonville Jaguars' opportunity to think outside the box and say, you know what? We're going to go against the grain on this one. We're going to see what he has. Now, once again, I'm not saying Gardner Minshew is going to be the future, but at least see what he has, because this is how you turn franchises around, when you take chances on people that don't, you know, deserve to be taken a chance of.
I love that perspective. I do. And I think it's important to have those words and have it be put in that context. We don't hear that enough. It's part of the debate. So transitioning to the other side of the ball, man, just going to lay it out there really simply for you. It's a yes or no question. Right. Will switching to the 3-4 suddenly make Todd Washington actually a good defensive coordinator?
Meh. Is that an answer? No. That's a hard yes or no question. I think he's going to be better, yes. So I'm saying yes. There you go.
Okay. Yes. I mean, It's kind of a running joke on this thing. He's sort of a whipping boy around these parts. But what is your take on them switching to the 3-4? Now, I know there was conversation last year about them wanting to do it, but then with Jan not being there so much, that and that affected it, yada, yada, yada. What's your take on it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, listen, I'm a big Todd Walsh fan as a person, man. That guy actually did me a solid by getting me out of training camp when he did. Well, I'll tell a short story about Todd Walsh, kind of tell you the type of guy that he is. So I was on my way out of Jacksonville. I was going to play the tweener hybrid. I didn't fit in anything in Gus Bradley's defense, so I was out. And we just started OTAs. The original plan was to keep me on the team because I was an extra body. And Todd Walsh said, hell no. If he's not going to be on this team in the future, I want him out tomorrow because give him another shot someplace else. That's what Todd Walsh did for me. So I'm always thankful for Todd Walsh from that standpoint. Now,
thank you, thank you for making me feel like an asshole.
No, not at all, man. Because listen, I'm sure you listen to the show. I've been super critical about the defense that he runs and how he calls it. And when we're talking about transitioning to a 3-4 defense, when they got Josh Allen last year, one of the very first things I said was they should switch to a 3-4 defense. Because to me, there's two types of coaches in the NFL. There's a coach who's stubborn, that always does things his way, and he's mediocre at best. And then the legendary coaches, the coaches that we talk about that get the head coaching roles sometimes, the coaches that go on the Hall of Fame as defensive coordinators, those coaches see what they have as a team, and they make the team adapt to his style, all right? They make the team adapt. He adapts his scheme to his players. So when you take a look at the team right now, and you see guys like Yannick Ngakoue still on the team, you see guys like a Josh Allen who's been a beast, you know, his rookie year. When you see you got Chase on in the wings coming up hot, you know. You got Schobert coming in, Miles Jack. It only makes sense, okay? Because I don't want Josh Allen, Yannick Ngakoue, last season switching, you know, playing like 50% of the reps. I want them on the field at all times because they're that good of football players. And I think last year you had a situation where it was a defensive coordinator who's always done things a certain way. And unfortunately, when you don't have the personnel to do it, it comes with bad results. And you saw it. You lost Marcel Darius, and all of a sudden the run game just went to shit. I mean, it was a porous defense at best. So am I intrigued about the 3-4 defense? Absolutely. Is it going to change, you know, overnight? Probably not, because keep in mind, we have the youngest team in the NFL right now. We're going through a COVID-19 pandemic where players can't get in the locker room and, you know, and get on the field together and play. So I am curious to see how this transition goes. But I think from a personnel standpoint, I am excited because it gives you opportunity to put players where they belong. I think Miles Jack can play middle linebacker, but he has to play a position where he's not making all the calls. I think, obviously, Josh Allen, Yannick Ngakoue, Chase on the outside, they can be a beast, okay? Obviously, you bring in a guy like Gunter on the defensive line who's played a 3-4 before. You bring in Al Woods, played a 3-4 before. All right, so you have the tools, and you have Joe Schobert, who's like, you know, Puz 2.0, probably even a little more athletic. I'm not knocking Puz, it is what it is. So you have all these tools in place. I'm happy that they're selling for utilizing them to the best of their abilities, unlike last season where it was just a nightmare.
Yeah, well, a nightmare to say the least, man. It was a rough one. For all involved, I'm sure them as well, including Todd Walsh. So I've got to transition now. Are you ready, Austin Lane? That's the question. Are you ready?
Hell no, man. It's like 80 degrees. Babe, Babe's gonna turn on the heat down a little. Hey, babe. Yeah, never mind. She's asleep. Can you turn the heat down a little? Okay, she's pissed off. I think I just woke her up. That was a bad call. Yeah, I'm ready, but it's hot as hell in here, so let's get it.
Oh, good. It's about to get hotter, my friend. Because you're about to enter the gauntlet.
The gauntlet is brought to you by A1 Sliders, your go-to guys for sliding glass door and window repair. If you live from New Smyrna Beach up to Jack's and you have an annoying sliding glass door on the back of your house, you get pissed off every time you try to go open it to go outside and grill you some nice steaks, call them now and get a free estimate on how you can make that thing slide real easy. 386-538-6835, or check out their website. It's a1sliders.com. Now to the gauntlet.
Austin Lane, the gauntlet, for those that are uninitiated, is our rapid style question and answer. Okay, so what I'm going to do, you do not know the questions that you're about to be hit with. Correct. It's going to be quickly, and I need the first thing that pops to your head, and then we're going to move on to the next one, okay?
All right, let's get it.
All right, those are the rules for the gauntlet. The only other rule we have is there are no rules. There's zero rules for the gauntlet.
Man, this is like the Thunderdome up in this bitch. I like it. Let's go.
It is. All right, without further ado, Austin Lane, your first question in the gauntlet. Who is the worst teammate you ever played with?
Woof.
That's the worst question to ask him.
I'm going to say Blaine Gabbert because he sent me to the hospital.
Okay, Blaine Gabbert. There it is. I don't think anybody sent me to the hospital. Next question. Coolest teammate that you've ever played with?
Evan Britton.
Evan Britton. Oh, I got questions for that later. All right, let's keep it rolling. Favorite place to eat in Jacksonville?
Mr. Taco.
Mr. Solid. All right. Yes or yes? Are you with me here? Yes or yes? Did Greg Hardy sucker punch you?
C. Yes. Oh, okay.
All right. Next question. What were you doing when you found out that you were drafted by the Jaguars?
I was drinking a beer eating brisket.
Nice. You were meant to be here, my friend. All right. Yes, sir. Let's keep it rolling. This is a tough one. Did okay. Kasim Osgood ever buy you a beer at the Ritz on $2 Corona night?
Oh, yeah.
You and me both, brother. You and me both. All right. Sorry for this one in advance. Is it weird that Solly only has 3 career sacks less than you?
Are we counting preseason games?
No, just regular season. Regular season.
And yes.
In your opinion, is the AEW being held back solely because of Tony Khan's refusal to take steroids?
Dude, have you seen Tony Khan, though? The guy might be on steroids. Have you seen pictures?
I saw one recently. I saw
one. Yeah, man. Yeah, the dude might be on steroids, or else he knows a good trainer. But, yeah, he's cultivating mass, if you will. Let's just call it that.
He's going to beat Dillard's ass.
He's coming for me.
He's coming for you. All right, let's not slow down the gauntlet. Worst player that you've ever played with. Not just the worst teammate, but the worst person on any team that you've ever been on.
Oh, man. Let's go with...
You can say Blaine Gabbert.
No, man. Listen, I was just joking about Blaine Gabbert because that fool sent me to the hospital, man. I'm not gonna lay it on too much. Shout out to the bricks at the beach. Worst player that I've ever played with. I'm trying to think, like, who came in for a little bit and then left right away.
We're going to keep the gauntlet moving, brother.
Okay, I'm slacking, man. The gauntlet's getting
messy. You're good. The gauntlet gets the best of some people. It's okay. Oh. We're going to move it. The answer for Austin Lane to this question is Josh Scobie, because Josh never said thank you.
There we go. Yeah.
All right. Go-to drinking spot in Murray, Kentucky. I didn't even know Murray, Kentucky was a fucking place, but where's the go-to drinking spot?
It probably would have been my apartment because there's a dry county. So we had to drive to Tennessee on the border, which was about 7 miles away. So we used to throw house parties. You say it sucks, but it was actually really fun. But yeah, so probably my apartment or one of my friends' apartments or houses.
There's really no bar in that college town?
No. So when I went to school there, there was zero bars. There was Applebee's. So like you go to Applebee's till like 10:30 and have a beer, and then they would close down after 11. Oh, but besides that, so, yeah, besides that, you drove to Max, which is about 7 miles out of Marin in the border of Tennessee. You got beer. Or if you wanted a liquor, you had to drive, like, 30 minutes away to get liquor. But, dude, I mean, it was straight, though, man, because, like, the house parties, those are my scene anyways. So, like, we had some killer house parties.
All right. I didn't know you went to an Amish school.
When I graduate, then the shit, it's a wet county now. So now there is bars, and they're selling shit in the gas station.
Oh, dagger.
I just missed out, man, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, so we touched on this a little bit earlier, Austin Lane, but we got to bring it up in the gauntlet. What is it like working day-to-day with the oldest 40-year-old man in the radio business?
Oh, man, it's a crazy journey, especially when he uses terms like the gram when he has Instagram. So every day is exciting, crazy, and sometimes cringy, man, but I love that dude to death, so it's all good.
My personal favorite was when he called an AVI an AVI.
Oh man, who are you telling, dude? And the best is like when I always like make fun of his he encourages me to rip his style all the time. And I'm the last person to make fun of someone's style, but we had like a running joke where I called him Eddie Bauer's cousin, Teddy Bauer and shit like that. So you guys go back and forth, man. He's a pretty good sport about it.
Oh, Teddy Bauer, I'm dying. Bauer, all right. How does it feel knowing that the Dillicle regularly scoops professionals like you?
Oh, dude, it's awesome, man. Like, listen, I've been very adamant about saying how much of a fan I am about that because I think he's going about it the right way. I've come to know in this business that people take things way too seriously sometimes, and I'm not that type of person, and I don't think Dill is either. So it's refreshing that, you know, somebody from the quote-unquote underground can come in and do someone's job better than they can when they're, you know, at the hierarchy, if you will. So I think it's bad, you know, I think it's badass when he drops scoops like that.
Okay, I'm ad-libbing here. This one isn't on my list, but I can do that because in the gauntlet, there are no rules. Better nickname for Eric Dillard, A, the Dillicle, B, the human bibliography because he's got sources, or C, the ice cream man.
Man.
He's got scoops.
Because he's got scoops.
The ice cream man. I mean, I think from a marketing standpoint, but once again, we're talking about the underground here, so I'm not sure if he's into marketing. But I think from a marketing standpoint, from T-shirts, from branding, I like the ice cream man.
Oh, okay. All right. I see.
Right, so if we're staying underground, though, and he just wants a cold, hard name, what's his cold, hard nickname?
Oh, I mean, I was going to call him the Underground King, but, like, I can just see, like, the ice cream man T-shirts, like, or starting up scooped or something like that. I mean, I think from a branding perspective, that's there for him. So.
Yeah, yeah. The Underground King, that's the UK, like where the Jaguars play. So, moving right along, if you could fight one person from Twitter in the octagon, who would it be and why?
Ooh, if I could fight one person. From Twitter. So, like a Twitter comment that kind of rubbed me the wrong way or something. Man. Or
somebody who sucks, like Clay Travis or something.
Yeah. Oh, dude, so people keep tagging me in his stuff, and I don't even know who Clay Travis is, to tell you the truth. You know what? And it's not really from Twitter, but it's just a guy I've always wanted to fight, Sean Hannity. Because Sean Hannity had a segment. I forgot, like, what it was even called. But I remember watching this video of Sean Hannity. He was, like, a Republican dude. Or whatever. I don't care about that. But he was making fun of Barack Obama's workouts. Because, like, Barack Obama was, like, bench pressing with, like, 10-pound dumbbells. Who cares? He's the president. But, like, Sean Hannity's like, I'm like Barack Obama. I do real sports, like MMA. And then it showed like a clip then of Sean Hannity working with Chuck Liddell hitting the mitts. And it was the dumbest shit ever. And I'm like, it made Sean Hannity look bad. It made Chuck Liddell look bad. And it made the sport of MMA look bad. So, like, I think a guy like that who wants to brag and have clout over he's an MMA guy that trains, I'd like to punch him in the face.
Okay. All right. That's acceptable. That's an acceptable answer here on the gauntlet. What percentage of NFL players would you say go out and get wild on Fridays during game week?
Ooh. Realistically, I would probably say, and I didn't fit in this category, by the way. It's crazy I didn't, but I'd probably say 20%.
Okay.
Maybe 20. Yeah, I'd say it's 20%.
Okay.
Yeah.
20% and Justin Blackmon. Gotcha. on a scale of 0 to 10, how terrible is it having to talk about golf on the radio?
Oh, 11, man. 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah, man. It's, listen, I try to be a trooper the best I can, and Brent knows that I struggle with it, but it's just a sport that I never grew up playing. I still have it over Brent Martineau that the first day that we went to the PGA Tour Golf Superstore and we did a simulator, I beat him closest to the pin. But I can't get into golf, man. I didn't grow up around it. I'm a Tiger Woods guy, but besides that, it is what it is. But obviously, I'll be a professional, and I oblige Brent Martineau because Brent lets me talk about wrestling and UFC. So kind of have that relationship going on.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, we don't. That's probably the one area where we don't envy you is talking about golf.
I appreciate it.
We've got a couple. I've got three questions left for you on the gauntlet. You're faring okay here. You've made it so far. Question one is another hypothetical. All right, we're big on those here.
Use your imaginations.
That's it. Who wins in an arm wrestling match? Gene Fournette or Tony Khan?
Oh, Tony Khan all day.
Tony Khan pre-roids or post-roids?
Tony Khan any kind of roids.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't trust dudes who rock polo shirts with their collars up. So,
gotcha. That's a fair assessment in life in general.
Yeah.
All right. With you training so hard and being so disciplined for MMA, what's the number one food that you miss eating regularly?
Say that again.
So you train really hard for MMA, and I know a lot of that includes your diet. What's the number one food that you having regularly?
Oh, Cap, let's not get it twisted, man, though. I'm still a heavyweight, and I eat whatever I want. So if I eat something, I eat something. Yeah, I don't really miss anything because I still eat it.
You don't miss anything. Okay, I respect that. I feel like one time I was in the studio with you guys, you were, like, sitting there drinking almond milk and eating.
No. I mean, like, listen, like, as far as my diet's concerned, like, yeah, I mean, I keep it pretty lean and everything. But, like, if I want a pizza, I'm going to have a pizza. If I want a burger, I'm going to have a burger. So I don't really starve myself or, like, wean myself off anything. I try to maintain a pretty strict diet. But if I want something, I get it.
Good. Yeah, you fit in well here. The three of us have a really strict diet, too. And, all right, final question of the gauntlet. What happens first, Austin Lane?
Okay.
Gene Fournette learns how to tweet, or the Jags make it to a Super Bowl. What happens first?
You guys gotta leave that man alone.
He's dead. He's dead.
Oh man, what happens first? Man, I hope is Twitter going to eventually be obsolete? That's where I'm trying to lean right now, where if we go in a new direction, I would say it probably happens first. I would say the Jaguars win a Super Bowl first.
Wow. All right. You heard it. What a way to end the gauntlet. We got Austin Lane proclaiming that the Jaguars will win a Super Bowl this season. You heard it here first. Put it on the 690 host, Austin Lane, claimed the Jaguars to win the Super Bowl.
But no, man, shout out to Gene, though. So my funny Gene Fournette story, because I knew who he was when I was in the stadium and everything, but we never had a conversation. And one of my very first introductions to the Jaguars media and, like, all the press and everything was, like, the very first day I went to training camp. And Gene Fournette's out there, you know, and we're shooting the shit a little bit. And he's an awesome dude. But also we get on the topic about, like, some player that just got drafted ran, like, a 4 or 5 or whatever. And Gene's like, oh, that's not bad. I'm like, yeah, Gene, that's pretty fast. And he's like, I can run a 5 flat. I'm like, and I turn around. I'm like, no, you can't, Gene. I'm like, I literally called him out in front of everybody. I'm like, Gene, you can't run a 5 flat. And then he kind of got, like, offended a little bit, like I was in the wrong. And I'm just like, dude, I'm telling you right now, you cannot run a 5 flat. I mean, we can line him up right now. So, like, I thought I kind of rubbed him the wrong way a little bit because I called him out in front of everybody. But then, I mean, he's been super cool to me ever since. So shout out to Gene for that.
Yeah, I don't think the average sports fan or just citizen in general realizes how fast anything in the fours is, let alone the ability to run five in the low fives. Like, it is something that doesn't register for people. Like, you sit up, we have a buddy, shout out to Andy Willis.
Oh, yeah, you know Andy? Yeah, for sure.
You know Andy. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you'll appreciate this story then. Okay. We're up at the draft in New York City.
Yep.
And Andy, like, prior to us going up there, he swears that he could run, what was it, boys, like a 4.8 or something? It was
4.8.
He swore he could run a 4.8 because he ran like cross country in seventh grade or something.
And
he swore up and down. He's telling everybody that he's training. Like, he's training, and he's going to do it in New York City in Central Park while we're there for the draft. And I don't know if Andy ever broke 6 flat with, like, a sundial. I don't know, but it's one of those things to me. Like, when you look at someone and they say, oh, I can run this, you know, I can run that fast.
Yeah, yeah.
9 times out of 10, that person doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, it's like, no.
Well, and, like, that's the mistake I made with Gene a little bit, because, like, I'm so used to, like, those locker room conversations, right? Like, the constant shit-talking to each other. And, like, sometimes I bring that, like, to the press, and, you know, I think it probably rubs people the wrong way sometimes. But, like, I'm starting to see, man, like, you know, the press, they're different type of cats, man, and I'm starting to adjust to it. But, like, there was this dude, and Brent never let me tell the story because he's with the competition. Do you guys know a guy like Dave Lamb or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know who that guy is or not?
Unfortunately, yes.
All right, cool. So I'm in the press box for a Jaguars game, and Dave Lamb – is Dave Lamb? Dave – yeah, okay, whatever his name is. Yeah, David Lamb. So Dave Lamb comes up to me. He's like, someone's sitting by you. I'm like, no, man, you're all good. I had no idea who this guy was, and I really still don't know who he is. But people are like, Mike DeRocco's in there. He's like, dude, this is the coolest shit ever. So Lamb sits next to me, and I can tell he's obviously in the media. He's got, like, this cigar that he's just chewing on. So immediately I don't trust the guy because I don't know why you chew on cigars, right? It looked like a giant Slim Jim that, like, a little toddler would just chew up and then spit out. So, dude, I was like, why is this guy putting a cigar next to me? So I was kind of freaked out. But me and Dave Lamb were sitting there, and I think it was Ramsey at the time who was still playing. Sorry to bring his name up. But Ramsey made a play, and he started, like, you know, jaw-jacking, clapping and everything. And Lamb's just like, man, I've never been a fan of that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, here we go. I'm like, here we go. Like, now I'm about to get in a huge argument and debate with this old dude I don't even know who's got, like, a Slim Jim beef jerky right next to me.
Fucking cigar guy.
Yeah. I'm about to let loose on this guy. Well, we start talking a little more, man. It turns out, you know what? Me and the dude had some pretty cool conversations. And what we ended up doing, I think it was against the Saints, actually, the game was. But we started doing this competition of we picked two players in the field, and we see who would beat the other one, right? So we'd be like, all right, we got between Taysom Hill and Jalen Ramsey. Oh, shit, I'm taking Jalen Ramsey all day. And Lamb like, ah, nah, he get his ass beat. Taysom Hill all day. So, like, we just went back and forth, man, and that's how we spent our entire day in the press box was comparing two guys on the field who would win in a fight. And I'll be honest, man, I got a lot of respect for that guy because it started off really sketchy. And it started off where it's like, all right, this guy's not into the modern NFL player. Like, I'm just going to lose my mind with this dude. But we actually found some common ground and had some fun. So sometimes you got a preconceived notion about the media members, man, but they're actually some pretty cool people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, David Lamb still sucks, but that's a good story.
That's what I heard, man. Like I said, I don't know the story behind that dude. I heard he gets a lot of hate all the time, but he was cool to me, man.
Oh, that's hilarious, man. That is hilarious. Well, Austin, thank you, man, for joining us. We appreciate the hell out of it. Definitely one of the best episodes we ever had. We appreciate all the stories and the time, man. We know it's kind of late.
Oh, dude, it's no problem at all, man. I mean, I'm a huge fan of what you guys do. I'm sure you guys probably get ragged on sometimes, you know, and stuff like that from, you know, those up above. But I just think you guys are being yourselves and you're being cool. And guess what, man? Players are also taking notice, right? Because there's a reason why Leonard Fournette came to hang out with you guys and wasn't on maybe 1010XL or hanging out with us, right? Because he's comfortable talking to you guys, and so am I. So, you know, it's obviously an open-door policy. I'm more than happy to come on your show anytime you want, man. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, listen, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here. We're going to play your outro music in a moment.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we say goodbye to a really good friend of ours.
Really good friend. He enjoys
it, and it kind of brightens his week every week. So what we say at the end of every episode is we say, love you, JB.
Love you, JB. Cool, man.
Love you, JB.
Love you, JB.
Love you, JB.
The magic is black, backyard happy and fertile. The castle, the gas, the king of the black circle. Same year, Bubby dropped two horns, hatched immature. Decor, Northport's 84, here is 84. Maybe the rednecks like flight, age jeopardy. Wake up the Avellini, crack by anyway. 17 summers in developing, would it be the middle school or ketamine? Yes. Left home in the dark to curl up in a bear hug of Suffolk County's arms with a bevy of heavy metal records and leather Bibles. More Anton LaVey than St. Michael. More Sherman, a foot on bricks behind Midas. Fly with the pentagram pilot, Sabbath and Judas and all tombs. Prudence seems team now, but then it was devil music. Brick six, the nickname clicks. Makeshift altar in a clearing in the sticks. Forfeit a kitten by the forks in the kitchen. But ours been through the same symbols. Pitchforks waving at a grand theft 4x4 support system, alas. Angus with the axe in the back. Fort round up a ring of pitch dark animal corpse in backyard black mass. And a brash curiosity got the grave robbery to pump and pluck skulls at a cemetery property. Cops cuff him and stuff him in Amity, but asylum. It's fantasy island, but now it's lions at the top. Sound folks, but focus on the environment. And how about could it loosen a Lucifer at his client? It would flake. Pale moon, pale horse. more sound than death and LSD to make it mean more than it meant. Pay attention, here's where the whole thing sours. It goes from intrigue and a wowzers. At a party, you're passed out drunk, castle gets got for 10 bags of dust. Now it's not a big town and people are big mouths. So he fishes around till he figures it out. Gary Lauer, 17 years young, you have no idea what you've done. Track him down. Beat him pissed, he got 5 bags back, still owes a 50. Yo, Ricky, Ricky, do we hound up a loot or show him how to hellbound do? Castle waits all debts, his let's just gun get baked instead. 2 shake hands and a beat play dead, though it's more like a skeeter shaking a web and a monk and a spider. And 2 of his friends, it was into the woods, a delusional mess. 4 kids dipped in a black hole bath. June 16, Castle snaps. Off guard, Gary tackle the pin, sees Rick pull a knife from his jack and a grin. Raise that knife like a sword to the moon. Plunge that knife through a porch of the youth. Go and say you left Satan, say you left Satan. Lambert Saint Seiya just caved in a facelift. 32 stab wounds, gouged out eyes. Burns on his skin, not a cloud in the sky. Castle would later explain he was told by Satan himself in the form of a crow to murder the kid cold, part of a pristine whole. No, 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 no. Just had to brag until somebody said, just had to rat. Set in the cell as a merchant of hate who would hang from a sheep before the third day. Some say Castle was part of a cult, but I'm sure there was more than we're told. More than adults or authority could rightly decode. Or maybe I'm wrong and he's finally home. Castle.
But the dude was cool, though, man. That dude had a sweet-ass Porsche. He had a Porsche Panamera, which I thought was kind of stupid at the time because I wasn't really a big car guy, and I thought it was a station wagon. But, dude, that shit had some pickup. Oh, bro, I got a story for you, too. So Blaine Gabbert actually one time at the Bricks sent me to the hospital. So get this shit. So we're at the Bricks after a game one night, and, like, I didn't really hang out with Blaine Gabbert a lot because, obviously, you know, he's the quarterback and everyone flocks to him. That's not really my style. But we just so happened to be out. It was me, Blaine Gabbert, Zach Miller, a bunch of my boys from the beach then. So I'll go out. And do you guys know what a lunchbox is? A shot? Lunchbox? All right. So we're all doing lunchboxes. And before we do it, you know, we drop the Armoretta or whatever and then the orange juice. We take a cheers. And we cheers, and I start drinking. Well, I felt something, like, sharp in my throat. And I put the glass down and realized that when we cheers, that cheers Blaine Gabbert, the motherfucker broke a big chart of glass off my thing from cheersing, and I swallowed it. So swallow the glass, dude. I'm like, it's like stuck in my throat. I'm like, oh shit, because it's like that, and I can't cough it back up. So I do the only logical thing, and I go to the bartender, and I go, hey, can I get 2 shots of the cheapest tequila that you got? Because my plan was to puke it back up. So take 2 shots of tequila, try to like gag it, and nothing's coming up. I'm like, fuck. Because at the time, I'm like, I don't want to swallow it and like do major damage. So it's literally just stuck in my throat and I can't really talk. So I go to my friend Mylan, who's like one of my best friends here in Jackson. I'm like, dude, you got to drive me to the hospital ASAP. I swallowed some glass. He's like, all right, let's go, let's go. Well, he's faded beyond all get out. So we get in my truck in the parking garage and he's like, yeah, I can't drive you. I'm way too hammered. I'm like, fuck. And I couldn't drive either. So I ended up calling a cab to go get me to the hospital at Southside. And what ended up happening was they took a metal rod and they shoved it down my throat and it shoved the glass down and I just passed it.
Oh my God.
That's insane and terrifying.
Yeah, but dude, I was so scared, man. Fucking Blaine, of all people too, Blaine Gabbert, dude. Like, what the hell, Sunshine?